This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at the Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2017, held in Sugar Creek, Ohio on March 3 and 4.
All right, welcome to the workshop, Developing Tomorrow's Teachers. Now, often, I like an idea. How many here are school board members? Okay. Pastors, principals. All right. One of the things that we often think about is the almost in our Christian schools is the survival thing of, you know, somebody said they're not coming back, who will we get? We kind of panic. And it's an ongoing thing of providing teachers. But the emphasis on this workshop is thinking about tomorrow's teachers, and that is giving the children that we work with, the young people we work with, a vision that maybe God will call them to be a teacher. This is not particularly a workshop on, where are we going to find next year's teachers? We're at August, the middle of August, we still need a teacher. Where are we going to find someone? Developing a mentality where we can encourage our young people to think about teaching. Our model is Jesus, the master teacher. We often think of Jesus teaching the masses. And yet you look at the gospel accounts, and a large part of the gospels, Jesus is simply working with a small group of people, training them to be his disciples. Probably almost half the Gospels is where Jesus worked with a small group of people. Mark 3, when he called the 12, he called them to be with him. To be with him. And one of the things we need to do in our schools is develop a feeling where we are in this together, and maybe a child will say, yeah, I'd like to be a teacher sometime. I'd like to be a teacher sometime. Jesus took and worked with that small group of people. They were his apprentices. They learned to teach. They learned to minister by being with Jesus. And I thought about it. There are often children and young people around Jesus. Yes, being a disciple is adult business, but it's also the children that we are rearing in our schools will grow up to follow God. We want them to grow up and follow God. We want them to follow in ministry. And so I was thinking, you know, as Jesus was teaching, as he was doing miracles, there were children watching. There were children there. And were their children thinking, you know, when I grow up, I want to be like that. I want to be one of those people. And Jesus took time for the children, and he blessed them. And when the disciples said, look, get rid of them, they're interfering. No, Jesus took time to take them in his arms and bless them. And those children continued on, and became the nucleus of the early church, and that story continues down through the years. And so are we as teachers, are we as school board members, are we as church communities modeling that teaching is okay? That is something I want to do. And I say that because there's sometimes things happen and people say, no, that's nothing. I want to have any part to do with it. We want to be able to model in our communities that the school, as teachers, as school board members, that teaching is good. And I want to bless you school board members who are here today. I worked 35 years in education. So had a lot of school board members that I worked with and worked with me and put up with me and so forth. And it was a blessing to work together. The sermon this morning, keep that vision alive. And live it in a way that our children are attracted to teaching and calling, the calling that Christ might give. I want not only to talk about, I want you to think about how what you do in your schools and perhaps some input that will help one another. I was asked to share what the school that I taught in for a good number of years, Berea Christian School in Harrisonburg, Virginia. We have a high school course that is a program that introduces students to what teaching really is like. And I'm not here to sell any particular program, because we hear what one school does. It may give us an idea to develop something in our own school, a very flexible thing. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about our student teaching program that we had there and have there. And maybe it'll spark some ideas, and maybe some of you have ideas of what you have been doing in your school to train the next generation. The question is, where do your teachers come from? Let me just throw it open. Where do your teachers come from? Where do you get your teachers? How many of you have teachers teaching in your school program now that have come through your school program? Yeah, well, that is good to see. That we're able to, the people that we have taught, continue on the ministry. And I think that is one of the things that is happening, because our schools have been going long enough years, that we're able to do that. However, there is a danger with that. That is because, you know, here's the standard, and we teach the next generation, and maybe it gets a little shorter and a little shorter, and we need to keep that standard high. I know a school where their math program is suffering because some of the teachers didn't know the stuff, and the next generation, so they didn't teach it, and the next generation came along and said, we don't know that stuff, so we can't teach it. And we need to constantly be challenging ourselves to excellence and to becoming better. And we've had many more resources now than we had in the past to do that. Many of you are using students and teachers now that have come through your school. And the question is, how did you or do you prepare them? We sometimes have the idea, well, we'll send them away. And there is a place for that. But are we taking the responsibility to preparing the young people in our communities to serve? Let me tell you about our school program. Berea Christian School began in 1972. And apparently the teacher's training program began early on, about 2 years into the program. So it's been going on for about 43 years. It's been up and down. Some years students enrolled in the course, and other times students told me it wasn't popular, so we didn't take the course. But through the years, we probably have had about a few over 70 students who have been trained in this school to be student teachers, and probably half of them have gone on to teach school. Some in other communities, a few in our church plants in Puerto Rico, but we've had some of them have gone and taught in other states and then came back to our school. So there were ups and downs. And like I said, sometimes it was not a popular course. Other times, many students have participated, but through the years, the program has continued. Last year, we had four students involved in the program, unique, two fellas. It's mostly a girls thing, and it's hard to get fellows, but last year we had two fellows and two girls. This year, there's only one student taking the course, and a few people did it for 2 years. And so, as I mentioned from my scanty records, I see that about half went on to teach in various schools. And I think this year, three or four of our ladies in the elementary school are teachers who have gone through our student teaching program, took some time off, and then, in most cases, and then came back and are employed in teaching in our school. many schools use older students to help the younger students, but this program is designed as a, for a special purpose. It's kind of part of our vocational program in which students get hands-on experience in various fields, and this is getting hands-on experience in the field of teaching. We do it, we have a high school through grade 12, and so we introduce our juniors and seniors to what it is like to be a classroom teacher. Students seem to think that they've been going to school all their lives. In the course of things, it's not been very long. But they think they've been going to school all their lives. And this program teaches them what it is like on the other side of the desk. And in their student biweekly reports, the comment often comes up, it's really different being on the other side of the desk. It really is. The program is not directly intended to produce teachers. It's just to give students an opportunity to see if their interests and skills are such that they could find a spot in the classroom as God leads them in the years ahead. And the program has really been a blessing. As I mentioned, those who have come back and ministered and served in the school, as well as serving many, many other places. We teach it as a regular high school course. They get a high school credit if they take the course. A few want to take it a second year, and so we have learned to make this course flexible. It is intended primarily for students who are academically advanced, but every once in a while you'll have someone who is a very weak student academically, whose gifts and talents are in helping, and we have made exceptions so that that person can take the course, and they can help in the school and develop their skills. So sometimes we call it student teaching, sometimes we call it teacher's aid training, and adjust the workload according to the student's academic ability. There are basically four requirements for the class. One, the equivalent of one classroom period every day, a student is assigned to a regular classroom teacher and works in that room for that period. They have to turn in biweekly reports of their hours, their activities, and the items they've learned. We have assigned readings established, book reports are required, and then a major research paper for teaching. Again, this kind of program can be very, very flexible. For example, we had one young lady who finished high school, and she wanted to come back and take student teaching. And so we opened the door, her schedule was flexible, and we opened the door, and she came back, and after taking a year off, went to Bible school or something, then she came back and was hired and was a fifth grade teacher. Another case, we had a student who was very, very talented in languages, and we needed a Spanish teacher. We were teaching elementary Spanish at that time, and Samuel was very gifted in languages. He just picks them up like this. He visits his Ukrainian neighbors and picked up Ukrainian, and so anyhow, he was very talented in Spanish, and I said, why don't you work this into a student teaching? And he said, I'd rather have the cash. And like I said, be flexible. And so we did. I was principal at that time, so he had to bring all lesson plans to me. I approved everything, and he was in the classroom teaching elementary Spanish. The second year, he did it on his own. And from there, he went off and taught school in Puerto Rico, where incidentally, he loved languages, and so he already knew Spanish, so they all studied French. But they're just several students, but we did. What's it take in a program like that? Basically, you have somebody who coordinates the program. Your school teachers are very active in this, and then, of course, the student teachers themselves. The program coordinator, usually it's the principal, but sometimes we've had an experienced secretary who has taught school, and she may coordinate the program. In our school, our marking periods are still the old six-week marking periods, and so the students would change rooms every 6 weeks so that they would get with a variety of teachers, many of them say, oh, I'd rather stay with the first graders. I just love them. They're so cute and blah, blah, you know. And tell them to move around so that you get a wide variety of experiences, see a wide variety of teachers. And then the coordinator would keep records of the time, give new assignments, check all the papers, talk to the students, give a listening ear both to the teachers who may be frustrated with a student teacher or a listening ear to the student who's taking the course. I would often take a copy of their biweekly reports that the student wrote and give it to the teacher so the teacher could see what they were learning. The teachers have to become used to having teachers in their rooms. Many of our teachers are young and they're nervous. You know, I'm scared enough teaching without having somebody there watching me. It keeps the teachers on their toes to have someone watching them as they work. The teachers have to plan activities for their student teacher to do, and some teachers do better in that than others. We give suggestions. We have papers that we give to the teachers telling them what kind of activities they should give to the student teachers. They spend a lot of time observing. They spend a lot of time answering questions with students. We have them working with small groups of children. We have them teaching classes under the approval and supervision of the classroom teacher. We have them doing bulletin boards. We have them doing devotionals. We have them planning that kind of thing. The list goes on and on, and some students are much more comfortable doing one thing or another. The teachers have to give suggestions and comments every 6 weeks and grade the student, telling them what kind of things they have done well and what kind of things they have not done well. Student teachers are graded on personality traits, effectiveness as a teacher's helper, and just a long list of things that they are graded. And then the teacher has to look at their own teaching style, because sometimes having a student in the room makes the teacher realize that I need to grow. For example, one teacher said, from my student teacher, I thought I needed to learn neatness. Another said, one thing I thought about was that she never seemed to be to notice how scatterbrained I was as a teacher. Teachers have to constantly be on their toes when there's someone there watching them. And then the teacher has the responsibility of giving words of encouragement or caution or making comments. One teacher said the student could have been more professional around the students. I like how she tried to give them tips to understand and remember them. She used current events and spiced up the lessons. Sometimes you have a word of rebuke. The teacher said, in light of being a good example, I thought the sweaters she was wearing were not appropriate. She could have told her that to the face, but she wrote it on her little evaluation form. But teachers have the job of evaluating the student teachers to come into their rooms. And then the student teachers themselves, they have to be flexible, because the teacher had a list of activities that they were to do, and the student had to fit into the situation. One thing student teachers face are times of just sitting and observing. And some students do not like that. They say, I want to be doing something. Sitting and observing is learning. Just watching how students react to a teacher is valuable. And you have a student teacher sitting in the back of the room watching, and they see things from the back of the room that the teacher does not see from the front of the room. It's kind of handy having somebody back there. in a public school setting where I was, in a fifth grade public school setting where I was observing as a course requirement, I discovered that one of the fifth grade students used snuff. And I reported that. That I saw that from the back of the room where the teacher didn't in front. Observing lets the student learn how a teacher deals with discipline problems, how a lesson is taught. The old adage, we teach as we have been taught. And so we are modeling for the next generation what is good teaching. Observing activity, one thing that I encourage students to do is just sit and watch one student for 45 minutes and write down everything that person does. And that's kind of amazing. Parents sometimes wonder why their children don't get things done at school. Have you ever watched a student and how much time they waste? How many minutes does it take for a fifth grade boy to demolish a pencil eraser? Sitting there slowly picking it apart when he should be working. Things like that. Students fritter away time. And the student teacher learns how children of different ages act by moving from room to room. By going from grades 1 through 7, we usually keep them away from higher level classes because of the fact that often they're in the youth group together, and there it's not the best to put a young person in charge of his peers. But by going from grades 1 through 7, they get an informal crash course in child psychology and child development, which they learn a good bit without even reading a book. Occasionally we put leave a student teacher being in an upper level because they're really interested in that grade level, but generally they spend most of their time observing because of the problems you have of people who are too close. So what do they do? Observing. We had a student teacher who was exasperated about students who wanted the students to just give them the answers. And that's what we as teachers face all the time. A good lesson. Sometimes students grade papers. And we have encouraged them not just to grade papers, but to watch for patterns of errors as they check. Find out why the child did not understand something so that you can help them rather than just put X, 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 X and give the paper back. But find the patterns of errors. I was once in a classroom observing and watching a child subtract. And the little girl she began at the left and she subtracted across to the right, doing it completely backward. The teacher had not caught it, but as I was observing, I was able to catch that and point it out to the teacher. So it's not just grading, recording, it's learning how children think or don't think. We often have student teachers plan devotionals. Sometimes a student teacher would come and say, may I be excused from high school chapel? I plan devotions and I want to be there and see how it goes, or I want to help there. And they learn from those kind of things. We once had a senior who planned a chapel and realized that she had not planned for a morning prayer. Now, we as adults would have just filled it in, but she observed, so we had no prayer. And then in the follow-up, she said, I won't let that happen again. And I have definitely learned from that experience. I think that's something that comes through. Another follow-up, we have that teachers learn to proofread their papers before they give them out to students. We have them supervising recess, this kind of thing. We emphasize in our school that students are to be supervised at all times. It's a lofty goal and hard to implement. And your school boards may ask your teachers, supervise the students at all times. And that is a hard one for a teacher to do. How can you be in the room helping someone who's doing makeup work and being out in the playground at the same time? We only stretch so far. But student teachers often are a help for the classroom teacher. They enjoy the interaction with the children. It builds real friendships. Often we've had student teachers will invite the children that they taught to their graduation services. Real friendships do develop. Student teachers need to be alert to petty squabbles, even dangerous situations. Between our sections of the gym, we have a curtain that comes down, and somehow one child held onto the curtain as the curtain was going up, and we had a student teacher who rescued the child rather than being hanging 20 feet up in the air. I was proud of her that she rose to the occasion and handled it quite well. Teaching of lessons. Planning, teaching lessons, we go through the steps of how a lesson is taught, and the teachers then evaluate, and one of our teachers even had the student teachers evaluate her teaching method. You have to be big to do that. You're doing great, I'll pat you on the back type of thing. We want real learning, we want them to learn from their mistakes. And generally, one of the things that student teachers learn is they don't plan enough. Suddenly, they're to do a 20-minute lesson, and they're done in 10 minutes. Then what do you do? Regular school teachers face the same thing, but student teachers learn that rather quickly. What about problems? What about learning in this situation? I put those two words together, problems and learning, because the problems we face as teachers are real, and the problems that the student teachers face help them to grow. Because we use high school students, they are very young, they're very inexperienced, they are learners, and we as responsible adults are there to help them learn. And so there's constant feedback, constant talking back between the teachers and the student teachers. Some of the student teachers find the record keeping a pain. Every 2 weeks you have a paper to turn in and tell what you've learned and what kind of activities you did, and some of them think that's just a pain, but they learn that most of teaching is just short-term goals, one after another. You meet that goal, you get ready for the next one. And teaching in real life is one short-term goal following another. Another thing they learn is the use of time. One student spent hours getting a bulletin board ready, and then somebody spilled water on it, and it was supposed to be a joke, I think, but the student teacher learned that jokes are not funny when they affect you. And also they learned that small projects may take a lot of time, and that's good training for real life teaching, because all of us struggle with time management. One of the things that the student teaching program has helped is behavior. The student teachers have to be models for the students they teach. They are watched, they are imitated. The little ones say, you know, so-and-so is a student teacher, and we saw them run in the halls. Okay. A borderline dress, borderline sweater needs to be commented on. One year we had several girls, including student teachers, found a very nice fall day tempting and played hooky during study hall, and we dealt with it. Several of the lady teachers sat down with them and talked about it, and it was a ladies' session. I was not there, but I understand there was crying and hugs and straight talk and prayer and the whole thing that ladies do well. But the student teachers suddenly woke up to the fact that we, as older girls in the school, do have an influence on the younger students. So I tell you about this program not as for something to say that your school has to have something like this, but to let you know that we need to be planting seeds in this generation for later teachers, not just let's get the teacher we need for next fall, but let's be planning and ahead so that there's kind of a seedbed, a hotbed that's planted, and these blossoming teachers are coming along. So I just tell you about this to let you know that you should take these ideas and adapt them to your situation, or don't even take them, you know, but think, how could this work in our situation? Every school is different. And so I want to ask the question, what are you all doing? We're a big enough group. What are you doing to be training teachers within your own setting? I didn't say it before, but there is something about using teachers that have come through your school and come through your congregations that is positive, because they understand the families, they understand the school culture. Every school culture has its little ways of doing things that people that come in from the outside say, why in the world do you do it this way? Well, this is the way we've done it. And maybe they mentioned this morning, maybe we should reevaluate that. But there's something about having people that have come through the system and they fit right in. And I say that carefully, because we welcome all the teachers that have come in from other communities, but many of them sometimes are frustrated. And maybe it's because the way we Southeastern Mennonites do things. But it's something that when people come through your school, they can make a good contribution when they come back as teachers. So what are you doing in your schools? What are you doing in your schools? I was asked to make this interactive and with suggestions, so speak up. What are you doing in your schools?
We're trying to develop a program.
Okay. Has it been working? What have you been doing?
We're still in the developmental stages.
Okay. How long has it been developing? that's not a good question to ask, but you know, it needs to get beyond the developmental stage and dive in. Yes?
We do just a few weeks where the students can do some teacher training, do a lot of the same things, except smaller scale.
Okay.
Find it to be a positive thing. They come back sometimes saying, wow, looks different from a teacher perspective. And they often become better students afterward.
What age or what grades?
We only go through 10th grade, so it is reserved for 10th graders. Uh-huh. Virtually all the girls take it, and probably half the fellows. We have one boy this year, he put an interest rate of 1 to 5 out of 5. And he has a lot of interest, and I do see him becoming a teacher. And then, of course, we end up using quite a few of those to teach with him in the school.
Mm-hmm.
So we have quite a few of them do come back as teachers.
So if you go through 10, they probably are out of school for X number of years.
Right.
Before they come back. And so that's, you do need that gap, and you need experience in doing other things. Okay, very good. And you say fellows get involved in it too, regularly?
I would say about 50% of the fellows
okay.
do it as well.
Well, you're to be commended, because we have very, very few fellows through
it's
the years.
It's a shorter program, obviously.
So yeah, shorter. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
We have the prior, we comprise a slate yearly, the prior graduates, for them to come in on a volunteer basis as an aide in that. So we have a rolling aide program where they come in from the prior year's graduates. And out of that, currently we have 3 of our 9 staff that would have been prior students teaching today.
So it's kind of a how far does your school go?
We just go through 8 currently.
Through 8, and then what age, like someone would be like another school, 9th grade, they're the ones who are coming back?
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And how much do they teach?
Depending on their ability, mm-hmm. after they've been there a while, we'll let them teach a class mm-hmm. with, of course, the homeroom teacher still being there.
Okay. See, in my setting, it was 11th to 12th grade. In his setting, it's 10th graders. In your setting, it would be right after 8th grade. And so it can work in a wide variety of ways. do they do this voluntarily?
Yeah, that's completely on a volunteer basis, mm-hmm. which also helps us, obviously, as in do we have to hire an aide full-time?
Uh-huh.
That fills in that gap a lot.
Well, that's interesting. I've never heard of that. So they pay that idea. So they voluntarily come back and help. It's kind of like, you know, I've been blessed all these years. Now I'll come and be a blessing. Yeah.
Well, some of these will only do once a month, and some of them are once a week. So The secretary arranges that schedule.
Okay. And so, like, how many would you have in the school setting at the same time?
Only one.
Just one. Okay, one per day, but still, in a course of a week, how many might you have?
Five?
Yeah. Okay. And so the teachers can count on someone being there to help. That takes a lot of organization and things. Is that the board's responsibility or someone else?
Secretary.
Okay. There was a hand over here.
Just describing what we do, 11th, 12th graders, we have done more, I guess, we found a blessing. It's pretty need-based. We have this year, I'm a teaching principal, I have more classes almost than I could, but I have an 11th grader who is essentially tasked with responsibility all year of teaching grade 4 math. And I monitor that, she reports to me. And so it's more need-based, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But she learns, maybe the weakness there is that she's not learning to interact with 8th graders.
But she's just one class period, right?
One class period.
Then she's back with her 8th graders the rest of the time.
Back with her 11th graders.
11th graders, I'm sorry. Yes, okay. You see how flexible this can be, just from hearing. What else? Don't be shy.
We generally do the, kind of what Eva's saying, we generally use 11th or 12th graders. We do 5th or 6th grade math or language, sometimes reading depending on their desire or what they would like, the need is. But I would use that, then also we give them credits, and they count their time, and we, in their grades, if they and their reports, I grade that, and as far as giving them credit for their high school. Then also, I use them also in my classroom to answer flags and questions of the other students. We have a small school, but I have 7th through 12th grade, and they would, while I'm in class in the room in the corner teaching math, they will answer the flags of the other students. I can observe that. Of course, I grade that then too.
Mm-hmm. There's someone over here, yes.
We have classes through 10th grade, and then those who are graduating will come back, usually anyway, for 11th grade, and they'll do their electives. And that's when they do their teacher apprenticing. That way, they don't have to drop out of any classes. And what we do is we have a, maybe I'll get in trouble for saying this, but we actually use CLEs, teacher training light units. We have them go through those, and then we assign them a classroom, and they're in that classroom the whole time. We start out slow. At first, they'll just, maybe this week, they'll observe the language class twice and teach it once. And so we just kind of go through the subjects, and then eventually, at the very end of the course, they will actually be the teacher in charge for the whole day.
Mm-hmm.
We have them art projects, recess. You know, they take their turns at weeks of doing each different thing, and the very last day is they teach the whole day.
And the regular teacher is there. Monitoring and evaluating
and
this
teacher, kind. The teacher, there's an evaluation form for every time that they teach. The student teacher is teaching. They give me that, and then the student teacher gets to see her as well, to know what they did right, what they could improve on.
Mm-hmm. Communication is a big thing. Well, just plain communication within the school, within the teachers, within the student teachers, board members, the whole thing. It the communication back and forth is so important. Yeah. Okay. Has anyone tried it and found problems and things that I haven't mentioned? We can talk about that. It sounds like successes in many of these, but what are some problems that may we run into that I may not have mentioned?
I'm not doing very well at evaluating and feeding back. I said we operate need-based, so that's a weakness for us.
It was for me, too. I was teaching principal, and so how do you stretch yourself to cover these? And also when I had student teachers in, sometimes I look back and I should have helped them more, given them more to do. Yeah. It varies so much from teacher to teacher when the student teachers come into your room. Yeah, so that's a weakness in an area that needs to, you know, are we wasting the student teacher's time by not giving them enough to do? So we need to, it's work for the teachers. It really is. I have a daughter right now, and she, things are changing the marking period, and she said, oh, I have a student teacher coming in, now I have to get all this stuff ready for her. And with 25 students of her own, you know, now she has another student coming in to keep busy. Keep busy. So it's work. It's work. It's not an easy program. And also, with the extra activities that students have in our program with readings and research, it's work because someone has to read them, evaluate them, and don't think that this is just an easy street so the teacher can sit back and let somebody else do the work. It's a lot of work. Any other problems you see? Or have experienced?
I have a question.
So, sure.
We're looking at this whole thing and thinking we should do something, and they're not doing a lot about this yet. That's why I'm sitting in this group. But the thing that is staring us in the face is what really can we do to really inspire the vision for these students to create the work to in them for long term. So what are you doing in your culture and in your vision overall that inspires them to do this?
Okay, those of you who've have worked with this, what is inspiring the young people? I mean, I will admit that a large percent, you know, I mentioned it sounds great to look over these years and 70-some people, but you think of all the other people that had no interest whatsoever. And so, yeah, it's not everybody's going to do that. Everybody has their place in the kingdom, in the church, and for some it will be teaching, and some it will not be, and we need to feel good about that, but I think we need to work hard so that it is something that is attractive.
I think one of the biggest things that you can do to make it attractive is have teachers that are passionate about what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Probably should have, probably add the ministry or the pastors and the businessmen in the congregation to that too.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, an appreciation for our teachers that is broader than the school itself, I think
has to be. Yeah. And the whole community. We have a lady in our community, a single lady that, I don't know, several times, maybe twice a month, she stops in after school and brings the teachers all a snack. They never did that when I taught school, but and I'm not. But you know, that's her ministry. To encourage the teachers. And unfortunately, that's, well, I guess, it's after the students have left. But that kind of, the teachers who feel blessed are passionate about what they do. If it's just, you know, I've got to get through, I'm bogged down. And school boards can really do that, of blessing their teachers. I know you're, doing it as volunteers and are working hard, and it's hard to get into the school, but bless your teachers. Yes.
One thing that we're endeavoring to do is make it worthwhile for our teachers to teach. I don't know how it is in a lot of schools, but it seemed traditionally that teaching has been viewed as kind of a service position, and they aren't paid very well. And we have endeavored at our school to change that, where a married man can afford to teach, where we can have a long-term teacher, and it ties in with having teachers that are passionate about what they do. You have somebody that enjoys teaching, but he gets married, so he has to quit because he can't afford to support a family. I think that's kind of pitiful. Our children are our most valuable resource, and I think all of us are blessed to have a Christian Day School, and yet if we can't pay our teachers or don't pay our teachers well enough to keep them teaching, what are we really saying?
I hope you heard his question. I can't answer that because I was on the teacher's side. I'll leave that with the school board. I heard something interesting said many years ago. Said the job of the school board is to make sure that neither the patrons nor the teachers do all the sacrificing. If we're sacrificed, we all need to sacrifice together. But yeah. Don't just ask your teachers to sacrifice if the families in the congregation are not going to sacrifice for the school. But I have to be careful when you're on the teacher's side. You have to be careful, you know, what you say to the school board. Yes, we have to wrap up here.
I'll say this from a teacher standpoint. I think we teachers on the other side, we need to be fair with the fact that there are small communities that really can't afford to be hiring a man with a large family. So I think communities vary so much. There's larger schools who can afford to do that. But even in a smaller community, if I've said already, you know, if a teacher goes to board meeting and, you know, they're all pulling up in their nice expensive vehicles, et cetera, and, you know, the school teacher sneaks in with whatever he's driving. You know, there's reasons why teachers quit. So much to talk about down those lines that I know it's time to stop. But
well, you have.
I think we just need to be fair as teachers as well, that there are communities that simply cannot pay. Yeah. So,
are you suggesting school boards need two vehicles?
Okay. Well, you have plenty of time over lunch and things to hash these things out. And thank you for your input. And it's time for us to dismiss. Thank you. Here. God bless you and your work. You're dismissed.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.